You're listening to Flaunt, Find Your Sparkle, and Create a Life You Love. After infidelity or betrayal, have you been betrayed by life, your body, or someone that you love? You're not alone. No matter what you've been through, Naked Self-Worth helps you regain confidence, joy, and enthusiasm so you can create a life you love and flourish. Tune in weekly and learn how.
Hello, welcome to Flaunt, Find Your Sparkle and Create a Life You Love After Infidelity or Betrayal. I'm Laura Cheadle, attorney and betrayal recovery coach, who believes that betrayal uncovers the truth. Betrayal uncovers the truth of what's possible for us once we stop focusing on what was done to us and start showing up unapologetically for ourselves. I would really love to connect to see how I could best support you on your betrayal recovery journey so you can understand what really happened and heal faster, skipping the mistakes, pain, and obsessive thoughts that plagued me during my own betrayal recovery journey. Today is the second of three interviews that I am doing with my husband, Sean, who is the man who betrayed me. For those of you who have been with me for a while, you likely know our story. And for those of you who are new, welcome. And let me give you a very brief rundown of our situation. My husband, Sean, cheated on me for 15 years with five different women. At the time that I found out, we had been married 23 years. And because his cheating was so extensive and there were so many different reasons for it, this show is going to have a lot of good, juicy nuggets for you and for the person who betrayed you if they are open and willing to listen. Some of the things that we are going to address today are why. Why would somebody cheat? We are going to talk about things like, how could you not think about me? How could you not think about your kids or your life when you were doing it? We're going to talk about some things like, how can you say you loved me? How can you say you still love me if you did something like this? And you are also going to get some insight on why, when you ask your cheating partner about what they were thinking or what was going on, they don't know. Why they don't really remember and why they can't answer questions. So that's why this is going to be such a good show, not only for you, but for the person who betrayed you, because it is my hope that this show will give them insight to their own inner workings. It will give them insight to what was going on inside of me, and will also let them to see that what they did and how they responded, in a sense, was normal. Because it's only when we feel that sense of psychological safety that we are indeed normal. Even though this isn't right or good or kind, but when we feel that sense of psychological safety that, yeah, I am normal, that's when we can open up and start doing the work, and not before then. So with that, buckle your seatbelts. There's going to be a lot here. We are going to talk about the mindset during the affair. And welcome to the show again, Sean.
Thank you.
So the first show that we did, we talked about some of the things that led up to you cheating. Some of the pain, some of your feeling of being vulnerable, some of your desire to be validated, and some of, how to say this, your not knowing what you were feeling, so your inability to express what you were feeling and what you needed. Is there anything else that you can think of to recap that first show, what led up to the affair, before we move into your state of mind during the affair?
I would just reiterate the discussion we had around the vulnerabilities, because it set the stage for the poor decisions that I made that were based on traumas I didn't even know were still sort of in me and causing me to not express my feelings, not see that the ways you probably did validate me. So I started seeking elsewhere that validation based on this pain, this trauma. I've done a lot of work around that now. But frankly, looking back, knew that, you know, that's a broken person who took that route, unfortunately. And it's not the route I wanted to take, by the way. What I wanted was a perfect marriage. That's tough to have, we all know. But this during phase is a very long phase. So it's going to be an interesting conversation to see why did it persist for so long.
Yeah, we've got a lot of ground to cover. Okay, so with the stage being set that you have in your heart a desire for a perfect marriage. We all have a desire, I think, for a perfect life, for a perfect marriage. And we also know that life is really freaking hard, that relationships are hard. And like you mentioned, you had a lot of trauma growing up that you never dealt with. And all people have a certain amount of trauma. And sadly, many people have not dealt with that trauma. So like you said, we have this frame, this background, some broken people, but still somebody who I think who has a good heart and who really legitimately wants to feel good and wants to feel happy and wants to be in a connected, committed marriage. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay. So let's move into this during phase. Let's start just from the beginning, from the first time you had an affair. So many people, or the first time you cheated, the first time you took action on that. So many women that I work with say, what were you thinking? What made it okay to do it that first time?
Well, nothing makes it okay to do it that first time or any time thereafter. Nothing makes it okay. And I think many of us are aware of that. And it's troubling, I'm sure, for the betrayed to understand how it is that we can get to a spot, the betrayer, get to a spot where we cross the line. And then when the line is crossed, how in the world do we maintain that whole process? So getting there, though, is something that I've thought about in hindsight a lot in reflecting on that time when it actually, you know, this person is out of state, it's a long ways away, it's not, you know, around the corner or, you know, a local person. It was hard to make these things happen. And when I was actually in a situation where I could be with her, it was a weird, like, tunnel vision for me. Tunnel experience. Like the rest of my life stopped when I was in that moment. And I'm only focused on this, they call it compartmentalization for a reason. For me, it was, you know, tunnel vision in that moment that I was going to see this through and cross the line. And some people would say you crossed the line earlier with flirting, you know, text messages, et cetera, phone calls, right? Because that's one of the, quote, affair partners was never a physical affair. It was all flirtation over text and such, right? So these things can happen in different ways. But for me, it was really a tunnel. I was like in a tunnel where it was just everything in the rest of my life was closed off.
So what was your mindset around what am I going to get from this? Why is this good? Because I love that you mentioned compartmentalization. That is something, you know, sometimes we put something aside, we muscle up, we go to work, we get through the day because we know I need to get through the day. Or we say, like, when you're in labor and you're having a child, you're like, I'm going to tough it out because I'm going to get the child at the end of the day and this is perfect. I'm going to stick it out because this is what I'm going to get. What did you think you were accomplishing by doing this? What did you think you were going to get at the end of the day?
Well, I think at some level you think you're going to get satisfaction. You think that, you know, whether it's physical or emotional, I think that my journey led me there because I wanted to be validated, and I wasn't, in terms of the emotional validation that I was seeking, thinking that this other person provided that, I really thought culminating in some sexual experience was going to sort of button that up and make it feel right, and that the validation would be seated and grounded now. So that I would be understood. And it just tells you how warped you can get when you start crossing the line and then you actually do. And for me, again, it's this emotional connection, not the sexual experience that, you know, in every single one of the other persons, that was a situation for me where it became really hard to explain. Why in the world would anybody go do this if not for the sexual gratification?
Right. And I definitely want to move into some of the other partners, but just that first instance, because this is something that so many men can't explain. I asked you this. Other women that I work with ask, so you wanted to leave me? So you wanted to find true love, and so you wanted to leave me? So you're finding somebody who validates you. You want to button it up with a sexual experience. It's going to be amazing. So you want to leave me? And how would you answer that? Because the way you answer that and the way many men answer it is no. And then there's this seeming disconnect. So let's go down that route. So you're with this person. You're like, yay, they're going to validate me. We're going to have sex. It's going to be amazing. To me, the logical next step is, and now we're going to be in love and we're going to build this relationship and we're going to be together.
So it's a major disconnect. And it's a disconnect for the betrayer as well. And for me, even in the work I started doing after all the disclosure, one counselor that I didn't go on with because he couldn't actually represent me and help me, he said, but he told me, he asked me 3 times inside of 1 hour, why are you still married? After I told him this whole story. And I cannot answer that question really super clearly in my own mind at the time. What I understood, though, is that I wanted to have a marriage that was full of peace and harmony and a partner that, you know, was symbiotic and everything, and we're validating each other. And I didn't feel like that was happening, but yet the incongruity in my mind is, why cross the line, break vows, all those things, and betray you when really what I want is you? And so I struggled with how that's even possible, right? And yet I continue to try to do the work you and I would do, which is mostly just living our life, because I went off and saw a few counselors here and there for various reasons, or we did some parenting classes. But the disputes that we had, or the lack of validation that I seemed to be getting in the marriage, I didn't think that it was necessary. I thought I could be validated by you. I thought, where's the glorious love we had when we met in the first, you know, 7-8 years? And why did it shift for me? Right? So why am I still married? Why did I stay married for 23 years at the time and still go with these other persons, right? It's a valid question and a tough one to answer. But as we noted on the first program, my why was to seek validation. But what did I get when I was with the other person? Did I get the validation? You know what? The reality is, not really. So why would you continue to do those things, right? Well, it's not easy to explain the human psyche that wasn't well, and that was me.
Yeah. Couple of things that I want to follow up and go deeper on is you're seeking something and you're not getting it. And it was, you never put, in hindsight, you can use the word validation. At the time, you never said to me, I don't feel like I'm getting validated. I need more validation. And that's something that I just want to talk about for whoever is listening and for whatever reason your partner cheated. It is my guess that, like Sean, they didn't know what they wanted. They didn't ask for what they wanted. They just kind of went out and were seeking this nebulous thing because on some level they were dissatisfied, but they didn't know how or why or what it was.
I didn't know what I wanted at the time. I didn't call it validation. That's true. And I'm sure for a lot of betrayers, the why is hard to explain because at the time they're not communicating what they're feeling and what they're missing. For some, it's in the bedroom or whatever, right? It can be a myriad of reasons why. To your point, not expressing the why is really the failing that I was experiencing as a person, not being in touch. Now, here's the thing. You know, big, strong dude, you know, supposed to be tough. You know, you walk it off, you tough it out, whatever, right? But you don't talk about your feelings and you don't cry. Now, you know that I'm an emotional guy. I can get high spun. I can cry. I can watch a movie and cry. And it's always inexplicable to me, right? Why these emotions bubble up. And I have no words, no dialogue to explain what it is that I'm lacking, the feelings that I'm feeling, that maybe my feelings are hurt or I felt disrespected. And instead, I might act out in harmful ways. And you see some people that are abusive that do that, right? That sadly, I mean, there's lots of reactions to our inability to communicate our feelings, much less detect what we are feeling. I thought there was three emotions, right? Sadness, fear, and rage. I mean, it's a lot of work to get to where I'm at today, and I'm still not in any good space in my own personal growth route, I would say. I feel like I have so much more to do on feelings and identifying and telling you when I felt disrespected or when I didn't feel validated. But it's so much better than it ever used to be because I'm also now aware and I'm trying to find the dialogue and express my needs. Yeah. And the I statements that, you know, we've many of us have explored are really helpful and powerful. Plus, I also know that it's truly over and the hard work in fighting for my marriage began, you know, 5 years ago now for you and I. But for me, it was really important to start exploring what was going on in my psyche, my experience when I went put myself back in those moments. And I can't remember everything. You brought up a point about what happened here. What are the details? What color was the bra? What is, you know, what is my situation? And it's really hard sometimes to identify all of that because I wasn't aware of all of that. Right. So my experience isn't this vision that you have of what must have been happening. Oh, it was all love. And you know, I'm going to run away with somebody. Now that happens. I know. And those whys may be different or the same, but the point is that was not my experience. And that's largely why I was still married, because I still wanted the marriage that I always wanted with you. And I need to figure out how to do that without going somewhere else.
Yeah. And one of the questions that comes up then is, okay, if you, like so many other men in their hearts are like, I want this woman, I want this marriage, I want this family. What part of you doesn't know that having an affair is going to trash that?
I think you always know that if it's disclosed, the marriage could be trashed. The relationship could be trashed. It's not that you don't know that could happen. You just try for that not to happen. So hence, you know, the manipulation, the justifying, and all the cover up of what you've done to keep it a secret.
Right. Because the hope is then that somebody won't find out and that somehow this will make my marriage better.
I don't know if it's going to make your marriage better, but it might make you feel better as the betrayer, right? And that's what my why was to go feel better somehow. For some people, that might be the sexual part. Some of it's the emotional part, right? Others, it might be running from something. But for me, I did want to feel better. And it's horrible to think that, you know, you can't stand in your place and find your own joy. You know, I used to think, as I said on our wedding day, that today I married happiness. It's a hard lesson that you aren't here to make me happy. Yeah. I have to turn inward to find my own happiness, my own joy, and that's a daily process.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it? And to a point you made earlier, some people gamble to quote-unquote find happiness. They shop, they drink, they, you know, there's a lot of behaviors, there's a lot of ways that people act out when they're not happy, and you nailed it. It's instead of turning within and figuring out themselves, they seek external validation. And as you've been saying all along, why did you do it? I did it for validation. But it's all external validation. None of it was internal validation. And there is such wisdom in that for anybody that, wow, it took you a lot of years and you hurt a lot of people trying to get them to validate you when all you needed to do was learn how to do it yourself.
Yeah, and you pick up on something that's critical. For me, I call it validation. For others, they could easily, and I could even see in my situation, use the word happiness. I'm not happy. I'm looking for happiness. Yeah. And happiness comes from within, not without. And so many of us that would drink or look at porn or go out constantly with, you know, add another softball team, right? You're just gone 5 nights a week.
Workaholic.
I've had buddies that are in that. Yeah, workaholic. There's a great book. I don't want to talk about it, that goes into a lot of isms, you know, alcoholism, workaholism, and a lot of running from. And so really, that I was looking for happiness or validation elsewhere and thinking that you're not making me happy or you're not validating me, right? Mm-hmm. When really that can happen within myself, and I had to go really do the work to figure that part out. Yeah. And fortunate that you saw how broken I was, and then that's when you had, you know, this realization that you wanted to fight for the marriage too. So we're, I think, both fortunate that we're still here together. Because that was a big disclosure and a serious problem that I was experiencing.
Yeah. And before I move on to the next question, what I want to say is you're 5 years into doing this work. And like you said, it's not done. We're scratching the surface here. You're growing, you're learning, you're changing. But for anybody who is listening to this, this is not a short-term fix. And I don't want to be discouraging. You can do it. You can save your marriage. You can have your partner transform. You can have the marriage of your dreams. And it takes work, you know, therapy, energy work, coaching, counseling, like you name it, classes, reading. It takes a lot of work and it takes time. And the realizations and the understandings develop and grow. It's not like you can have a 1-hour appointment with somebody and bam, all the shifts happen and your partner comes home a different person and says, oh, honey, I'm so sorry. What I understand about myself is, and now we're fixed.
Yeah. And I think I would add that I'm not sure that you're ever fixed.
Yep.
We are humans. We're still going to have loss in our life, right? There's going to be perhaps trauma. Sadly, you know, accidents happen, a car accident, or you lose your job. There's still going to be events, life events that can be very disruptive. How do you navigate those? That to me is really, when you say, you know, I'm 5 years in, but I'm just scratching the surface. I think I'm a little deeper than the surface, but life still continues to happen. Just lost my dad recently. a lot of pain around that I didn't expect.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't, you know, the greatest relationship, but, you know, I had a connection with him later in life. And so now there's loss, right? So whatever your issue is going to be, to me, you got to use the phrase practice. Are you practicing what you've learned about yourself, about your spouse, about the human condition, about feelings, about expression, right? If you're
making
not practicing,
yourself happy.
Yeah. If you're not practicing, whether that's daily, weekly, whatever it takes to stay in alignment and connected with each other, then you're going to struggle.
Right.
So how do you, what are you practicing, right? Are you practicing non-verbal communication? Because that's probably not going to get you much further than you'd been.
Exactly. Right?
Are you practicing suppressing your feelings? No, you want to practice expressing your feelings, knowing what you're feeling. Where in your body are you feeling it? There's so many things to say about all of this, right? Are you practicing personal connection? Do you, can you stand and stare at each other eye to eye, right? The things you and I do today are so much different than we did for 15, 20 years.
Right.
And to me, that kind of level of practice for partners is really transformative compared to the experience I think I had that led me into affairs.
Exactly. Okay. Now what I want to move into is, again, state of mind during. And what I want to do is, sticking with the first affair partner, we will lump some of the other ones in a kind of a different category next. But sticking with the first affair partner, that you expressed and explained really well why you were going out. You were seeking validation. You were thinking, well, if my wife can't make me happy, this person is going to make me happy. And then I'll be happy. And then I can stay in my marriage and my marriage is going to work and it's going to be fine. So in your mind, it is a disconnect. It's not that I want to run off and be with this person. It's I want to make myself happy. Let's talk about how that worked for you. How happy were you after each time? What kept it going for 15 years? Because the way you set it up in your mind is, I'm just going to keep this person on the side for the rest of my life, and they're going to bring me that happiness, and then I can have this completely compartmented life. My life at home that is now perfect because this person on the side is giving me all the validation that I need. So now, la, marriage is perfect, relationship is perfect, and we're all happy. Did that work out for you?
No, it didn't work out for me. But, you know, there's a notion in affairs where sometimes affair partners really feel stuck after they've crossed the line. And we would really like for the affair to end. Some do break it up, and that's what where disclosure comes in, perhaps. But for me, I realized that the physical is not what that was about. It was, I thought this person was a friend. I thought this person was somebody I could confide in. I thought this person provided good advice to me. I thought this person validated me. All the reasons that I went to this person, even in the beginning, before it got kind of flirty, and then when I realized that the sexual part of it was not why I crossed the line and I should not have done that, I really felt stuck. And so, no, it did not work out for me. And, you know, so why did it persist? That's another question.
Yeah. So, and let's start from the beginning, because so you were, how long were you in the, this is awesome, I'm in love, this is awesome, this is working for me. How long were you in that phase of, yeah, this is a good thing, and it's kind of exciting to plan this time, and it's kind of exciting to take care of Laura so she won't be calling me? How describe your mindset in the exciting, this is working well for me phase.
Well, it was a short phase considering the length. But it was also not I was in love, and it was not nirvana or any of these things. But it was truthfully exciting to feel like somebody's responding to me and seems to get me, right? Seems to understand, because, you know, if I had a crystal ball or hindsight, I could have said, look, this conversation that we're having is going too deep into our marriage, our kids, or whatever.
Your marriage. She has was not married. She's has not never married, been no married. Kids,
right? Yeah. But the point is, I'm starting to confide in my problem, her with her in my problems, and feeling like she gets me and she's giving good feedback for me, which wasn't go talk to your wife, which wasn't go, you know, get this counseling or whatever, right?
Right.
It was
see me.
See me, right? It was get more of her, and I will be more satisfied, more validated. So it was a relatively short period given 15 years, but I would say, you know, it's 18 months. It's 2 years max, because that's about when the first two encounters happen. And then, you know, there's a big break because, again, this person's out of state, so I don't go up there all the time. And so it was when I'm in the moment, my mindset in the moment, when I think back to, you know, those early years, it's a lot of communication. There's a text here and there. There's, you know, once in a while an email, but a phone call. And we had to work the phone calls around where, you know, I'm alone. I'm no one's home, or I'm on whatever, an errand or whatever. So there's manipulation just to make the phone calls, right? Or you're deleting a text thread after a while or whatever it is. And to me, it started to feel like this should have just been a friendship, and it might not have been a fair and good friendship at that, right? So to me, I mean, I had to look at it in hindsight that it's not working out, but at the time, I'm still trying to manipulate it and manage it.
Yeah. So where is that turning point where you think, because we've all been there, we've all met, whether it's a friendship or in our dating life, we've all met that person where we're like, this is going to be great. And then it starts creeping in and you're like, oh my gosh, oh, this is not going to work. Where, and those were my words, not yours, where does that turning point start happening where you start realizing? I mean, it's pretty early on, even before you acknowledge it to yourself, but where do you start really realizing this isn't what I need. This isn't what I want. Shoot. I'm at this place now and I can't get out. When did that happen for you?
Well, it was after the second time we met in person. And I knew then that this is not a physical success. This is not something that I want to continue to pursue. Even though there was a few more encounters after that, it was something, again, like I said, I tried to manipulate the situation into, it's a friendship that dabbles. It's a friendship that I could get validation and some, I don't want to even call it counseling, but it's
someone to vent to who's going to give
it's venting, you. It's venting and feedback, right?
And feedback that's going to give you what you want to hear. Not honest feedback, but she told you everything you wanted to hear to bring you back to her.
Yes, and you got to understand that, you know, in the course of a long relationship like that, it's not all one-sided. Like, you know, Sean needs to be validated, so Sean calls other person. It was a whole bunch of phone calls about life, about other things, about somebody that we knew growing up that died, something that, you know, she needed, you know, she wanted advice or whatever it is, right? And there was an odd time during that whole thing when I was trying to get her to date. And, you know, it's like, I wanted this thing to end.
So why didn't you end it?
Yeah, well, that's where I felt stuck. And didn't know the consequences of ending it, frankly. And I don't think most of us ever do, except that, you know, it could be really bad. Mm-hmm. And so call it fear, call it shame. It's inexplicable why, you know, you can't be just stand in your place and be strong enough to end something like that, much less not ever do it. But so, I didn't end it until disclosure came about.
Mm-hmm. So you have this relationship. You seek it out because you want to feel better. You don't actually feel better. Before we move on, you say for about 18 months, you felt better. I want to talk about that time before we move on, because there's a lot of men that are in that similar situation. Describe feeling better. I mean, how is this working? Why aren't you feeling guilty? Women will say, what about you didn't think about me? How can you still love me during that? Talk about feeling better and still being in your family.
This is where you really need a course in compartmentalization and how that actually works. And I like, as it was described to me, to use the same description of a chest of drawers. Imagine every drawer is a pocket of your life, and an affair other person is one of those drawers. My family is a whole nother drawer, and it might be a big drawer. There's other drawers, right? There might be a sports drawer. There might be, you know, a work drawer. And ironically, work is something that many of us compartmentalize, but we have a hard time closing a drawer. Right. So the point to your question is, how do you get out of a compartment and go to another compartment? That is being with an affair person and then going back to family or going to work or whatever it is, going to church, for goodness sakes. Right. If you're with this affair partner and you literally close the drawer, that is shutting down that compartment. And all these neurons, however that works, right? The science is there, but you go and call your wife, or you're on your flight home or your drive home or whatever it is. You're opening the family drawer, that compartment, wholly. I'm not, you know, 2 feet in each drawer. I am closing and opening drawers all the time. And many of us do this. Some of us don't do it very well. And so some people, you know, to your point about the guilt gets closed with the drawer. It's literally compartmented. So it's not like, you know, I'm carrying this with me all the time and that I feel like I have to, you know, the weight of the guilt, I got to go disclose it.
Right.
Right.
And yet, I want to put this in here too, because this happened in our relationship and this happens to in countless other relationships too. The guilt isn't there consciously. But then so often when you would come home, or more likely when you were about to leave, you would pick a fight with me. So you could be mad at me. So somehow inside you're justifying, well, it's okay to do because I really have a bad relationship. And that is so common. Everybody's like, I could now looking back, the years he was having an affair, he was always picking fights with me.
I think that part of the manipulation process can cause us to, I mean, how do you get out of the family drawer and go to the next drawer, right? So some people would say, yes, they become ornery, or they pick a fight, or they become distant, or they don't want to be present, right? So they look for reasons to escape the family drawer and close that drawer. And you can then call that justifying, right? The persistence of the affair, because now you want to get over to the affair drawer and open that drawer. You know, for others, it might be just getting into the pornography drawer, right? Or whatever. It's a personal private thing. So compartmentalization happens in all of these areas. Right. Some people, they drink alone, or they, you know, it's not a social thing and it's not a family thing. They want to go and be at the bar. So that's a compartment, and they do the same kind of thing I was doing in their family drawer. To get away and disconnect from the family.
Yeah. Right? And like, so that, it's the reason to get away, the justification to get away. Right. I had to get away because.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So closing the drawer on that for a while. You have this affair. It's not working. You can't get out of it. In your mind, fortunately, she lives far away because I don't have to deal with her all the time. Yet, even though it didn't work, even though you feel trapped, even though you feel stuck, you choose to have affairs with 4 other women. Talk about that rationale.
This is a whole different phase that, speaking of feeling vulnerable, where, and you and I have talked about this, but I really thought you were doing something. And I thought you were doing something with 2 other people. I'm realizing that you had begun sort of dance troupe career, not really a career, but a hobby.
Having fun.
And but you were in superb shape, and I still have a dad body, and it was really, I'm losing hair, right? And I'm really feeling self-conscious about where I'm at. So I took charge, lost 30 pounds, you know, tried to stay fit, get fit, was thrilled with what you were doing because the whole dancing thing was really cool to me, but it seemed to have these, you know, flirty side perks that I thought were going further. And I felt like the vulnerability that I had is that I was also a betrayed person in a prior marriage. And I thought, I don't want to be stung again. I need to be ready. So this was a very different why, if you will, and purpose for trying to explore if I was acceptable to other people. And all those are failures. Everything's a freaking failure about affairs. It's just horrible. Yeah.
And thank you for saying honestly, like, it is the vulnerability. It's, there's a lot of pain in that, that you were betrayed before. At the time, only you knew that you had been cheating on me. And that amps up the fear. That amps up, I mean, there's shame for what you did. There's fear that it's going to happen again. And there's also that protection instinct that I'm not going to be hurt again. And if she's going to do something, I got to protect myself. I mean, that's a horrible position to be in.
Not comfortable at all.
And then going back, you know, to the logical question with hindsight that we can answer, but at the time, why didn't you express that to me? Why didn't you say, I'm concerned, I'm afraid, I'm sad, I'm having all this vulnerability? I mean, I can understand maybe not wanting to reveal the affair at that point, but why no communication around that?
Well, I still had no tools that I was practicing use of, like I do today, to express my vulnerabilities. And I did not know that I had vulnerabilities. I'm still being tough guy. I'm still highly successful at work and have a mask over all of my trauma scars. I am suppressing, oppressing, you know, but then the inability to explain where I'm at and what I'm feeling in an authentic way with you, right? So that I could get feedback on that and make sure that you understand where I'm at and then get reasonable change in our behavior, right? That should have been happening, and it could have been happening with the right help back then, but I didn't know it was a vulnerability. I didn't know how to express it. I just felt angry. Not getting what I want, so I'm going to go somewhere else. And it was really, you know, frustrating to be, like, there's this notion that you and I, this story you and I have where I'm not a morning person, but if I, you know, didn't want to have to deal with something in the morning, I would get up and head to work super early.
Yep.
Right? And you thought I was off having a real big project, working really hard, and I'm just mad as hell and can't figure out how to express myself and off to work. And then it just stews.
Right. And I'm in a state of gratitude. And you're mad. And think about the disconnect there.
Yeah. And the happiness line was totally different for both of us during those periods.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So did you feel stuck in these other affairs? How did you start and end these?
They were fleeting in a way. It was more experiential, not emotionally connecting. The one, of course, was never physical, so it's just, you know, texting and being naughty on texts and not enacting and engaging. And I always thought, well, if that person wasn't out of state, then that probably could have been an encounter. But, you know, others were, I mean, every one of them was different. I'm not sure, you know, there's any value in explaining the description around those. It's just that they were fleeting. They were very short and, you know, I mean, one encounter each, right? And not, I mean, there was two that were the flirting And it wasn't this emotional connection flirting. It's just my vulnerability is, do I still have a dad bod, right? Or have I really turned a corner here and trying to stay fit and, you know, looking at my 40s, you know, and into the 50s, where am I going with all of this? And what's it going to be like physically for me? Because I am athletic. I want to be athletic. I want to stay fit and lose all that weight and then keep it off. But losing my hair, I'm, you know, this, I'm that, right? And not seeing that that's really a vulnerability. I just needed some reaction that, you know, you're hot, you're dancing with this troupe, and I'm like, holy cow, I'm not, you know? So it would be nice to, I think, go through life, and you know, a lot of people experience this, where you just don't love yourself. And the more work we do in that area, I think the better we all feel about expressing our needs and what we want, because you love yourself.
Yeah. So well said, because, and I do want to point this out too, because a lot of women say this to me too, we were still having sex. We were having a lot of sex. It's not like we were having years where nothing happened. It was just your desire to know that you were still attractive to other people. You were attractive to me, but you wanted to be attractive to other people.
I wanted to be attractive in life. And I felt like you were, and I wasn't. Yeah. And you know, I didn't even like myself in sex. I mean, it's like, yes, we were still having sex, but I didn't like how I looked. And so that's a huge vulnerability. And, you know, all shapes and sizes, right? I mean, it's not about everybody feeling like you have to love yourself physically, but in a way, you just have to love yourself, whatever you are, whatever you like, right?
Yeah.
Whatever shape and size you're comfortable with is what I think you ought to love. And then where are you in your relationships at that point?
Yeah.
And are you both in the same spot?
Right. And you know what? That brings up something that is a bit of a segue, a bit of a rabbit hole, but I want to go there because I've had a whole show dedicated to this. There is a myth that the affair partner must be so beautiful, so amazing, so good in bed, so incredible to talk to, that the betrayed partner, and I know I felt this way, I felt so ugly. I felt like I must be the most hideous, stupid, unable to talk, cannot give you advice, cannot find connection. I thought my body, my hair, my face, I thought I must be so horrific that you had to find these other people and that you would find people that were better than me. And again, not to be like judgy around bodies, because there's beauty in everything. And yet, for the sake of this conversation, we're just going to go there. The affair partners were not attractive, were not educated, did not provide good advice, objectively had way less going on than I did. And I have a whole show about the affair partner is usually a reflection of how the cheater feels about themselves inside. So let's talk about that a little bit. Why you selected way lesser class, lesser quality, lesser everything people.
For me, the choice cross a line was not because of the physicality of the other person. The choice to cross the line was a personal vulnerability, a personal flaw. With the long-term person, I needed the emotional validation. With the short-term people, I wanted physical validation. I wanted to prove that I was worthy of attraction, or whatever, you know, the experience could be. I wanted to see if I was capable of doing that. And it wasn't about the physicality of the other person. And I find that, I know that's tough on you, because it wasn't. You are my queen of being hot. That's my attraction. It was not a physical attraction with these other persons. That just, you know, it's why? Why would I let myself do that? I don't know. You know, it was really hard to figure this out for a long time because the physical didn't work either. And it was, you know, a big mistake every freaking time. And it was like, you know what? I need to somehow understand that my own self-esteem has taken a major hit and I need to go work on this.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you. So wrapping back around to the beginning and just answering, I think you've answered so much in saying, I don't understand it. I didn't understand it then. It just seemed like the things to do. 5 years later, how much more clarity do you think you have? And how much more clarity do you think is still yet to come?
Well, I don't know how you measure how much clarity, you know, I don't think it's a percentage, but it's, can I write a book about it? You know, I don't know. I don't think I have that clarity. I don't think I understand it all. But I am way ahead of where I used to be. You want to call that 70, 80%? Something like that's what it feels like on why these things happen and why my situation unraveled like it did and why I unraveled as a person to allow all that to happen, right? It was really challenging to stand in the mirror as a betrayer and face my own shame and guilt around that for a long time. Obviously, coming on a show like this and talking about it, you know, is a huge leap for me. We've talked on a couple other programs, and it's hard, right? Every time, there's still a real difficult ability to, or a scary feeling,
yeah,
to step forward and say, I did this, I own it, and here's how and why and all those things.
And what I don't know.
And what I still don't know, right, is what I don't know. Because I only know what I don't know or something. But anyway, it's really challenging for me to also piece together gaps. Because you do delete a lot of text and you do delete a lot of communications, right? And phone calls are gone and done. And trying to explain the whole love piece or the infatuation piece or the excitement piece, it's taking a lot of dialogue to sort of resurrect it. You know, I'm not going to call it hypnosis, but I sort of felt like I had to journal and discuss these things privately with counselors and then with you, having safe conversations, right? And as we always set it up, you know, you have a difficult question. You'll set it up for me. So I'll know it's going to be an affair question or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And is now a good time? And, you know, if I'm ready, I'll say, yeah. Otherwise, you know, let's do this after dinner or whatever. And, you know, hit me, right?
Right.
And then I try to answer. And it's funny how little sometimes when you compartment, things get left in a drawer and you haven't dealt with it. So you don't have a good recall.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And I am so grateful and so glad that you have found it in you to have these conversations, that you have done the work and that you are willing to share with others what it is you are going through, because I do recognize that that takes a lot of bravery. And the thing is, I also recognize there's this tension between, okay, you're the one that caused the problem, and we don't want to then celebrate the recovery of the person or the bravery of the person who caused the problem. But until we get comfortable with that tension and recognize, okay, yes, hurt people do hurt people, and it does take bravery to redeem oneself. And until we're comfortable talking about that and feeling around all of that, more people in your situation will not be comfortable doing the work to take that deep dive inside and to actually start repairing and redeeming and making restitution. And whether it's alcoholism or mental health or sexual abuse or any of those horrible things in our society that there's all this stigma and there's all this shame around, the point is we've got to talk about it. We've got to talk about what it's like to be the one who betrays, to be the one who abuses, to be that one. And until we talk about it, we're not going to solve the problem, because we can't solve the problem just having the victim share their side of the equation. It takes everybody coming together to bridge that gap to get that problem solved. So thank you for being strong and being brave enough to share what was going on in your mind, in your heart, in your psyche before and during. And then the next show after, we're going to take a deep dive into some more of that. Like, what kind of a man are you? And how do you redeem yourself after such a horrific fall? And what has happened within you and your life since D-Day, since the revelation of all of this, both good and bad? I want to close this show just with a revelation that there's light and dark within all of us. There's good and bad within all of us. There's pain and pleasure within all of us. We are all a mixture of everything. And it's only when we deny the bad that it strengthens. And it's hard to look upon that which shames us or embarrasses us, or to say, yeah, I know I hurt other people. But it's only when we look upon that part that we can really heal, that we can really rise, that we can own our goodness, our strength. And I thank you as my audience for holding such beautiful space for Shawn and I to come together and to have these series of conversations, because, yeah, it's painful and it's hard and there's a lot here. And it's only in our honesty, we believe, that we can really empower others to embrace themselves and their lives and their situations honestly as well. So thank you for holding such beautiful space for us. I look forward to seeing you on the next show. And as usual, have an amazing week. And always remember to flaunt exactly who you are, because who you are is always more than enough.
Tune in next time to Flaunt. Find your sparkle and create a life you love after infidelity or betrayal. With radio host and live choreographer Laura Cheadle, every Wednesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Develop naked self-worth and reclaim your confidence, enthusiasm, and joy so you can create a life you love and embrace who you are today. Download your free Sparkle Through Betrayal Recovery Guide at NakedSelfWorth.com.
There are three things